Sandra Kyle knows what she knows, however. She is a retired polytechnic lecturer and a part-time music teacher who lives in Whanganui, and each week she visits two local meatworks to conduct usually solitary vigils for animals on their way to slaughter. She's a committed vegan and a local representative of the International Animal Save Movement. She stands nearby the meatworks, bearing witness as animal trucks arrive. She tries to provide some comfort to the animals. Sandra Kyle wants all animal slaughterhouses in New Zealand closed down by the year 2025, as she has argued in a self-published book called Glass Walls. I asked her to tell me a little more about these vigils that she has been holding outside slaughterhouses for the last 5 years.
I started when I was living in the Waikato. I really just started off on my own as part of a small group of vegan friends who decided that we'd do slaughterhouse vigils. But after a short time, people dropped away for various reasons. They had families and full-time work commitments and so on, whereas I had more time. I was already retired at that stage and I was single. So I just kept doing them by myself. After about 18 months, I joined the Worldwide Save Movement, who are known for doing vigils at slaughterhouses. And so the SAVE movement has about 1,000 chapters now worldwide on just about every continent of people who do what I do, who bear witness to the animals when they're going to slaughter.
What's your main motivation? Is it bearing witness? What does that mean, bearing witness? Are you giving comfort? Are you drawing attention? Are you trying to make it stop? How does it work?
All of those things, Kim. It all started in, I think it was about 2010, when Anita Quines, she is a Toronto citizen, and she was walking her dog and she kept noticing huge truckloads of pigs going to a downtown slaughterhouse, Fearman's Pork. So she had the idea of bearing witness to the animals as they entered the slaughterhouse gates, and she got some people around her. The idea that she had was, I think, based on Tolstoy, who said, when you see someone suffering, don't turn away, but on the contrary, come closer to see if you can help. So I think early on she was standing at the slaughterhouse and the truck stopped and in front of them, and she could see that the pigs were highly stressed inside, very hot, hyperventilating, frothing at the mouth. And she had the idea of giving them some water. And when she did this, the truck driver got down and abused her and said that she was tampering with private property. Anyhow, there was a court case that she was eventually exonerated from. But they were kind of the beginnings of the SAVE movement. And even though I was kind of doing mine independently, after about 18 months, I joined the SAVE movement. I'm one of the country liaisons now here in New Zealand, and we have about 10 chapters.
So when you stand holding your vigil, are you able to get close enough to the animals to give them water, for example, to give them succour?
Well, when I was in the Waikato, I couldn't. The trucks going past us just whizzed past, and we could see the animals peering out through the slats, but there was nothing we could do. There's a value, of course, in standing on the roadside with our signs, because that's raising awareness. But since I came to Whanganui, I can get close to the animals. I bear witness at 2 slaughterhouses, and at one of them, I can climb up on my stepladder and look down on the pens and see the animals waiting to be slaughtered. So that means I can talk to them, I can sing to them, and I always hope that I am giving them some comfort, that they can feel my love and my care for them in some way.
I can't help thinking that it must cause you more distress than gives them comfort.
I understand what you're saying. And a couple of things, just in terms of giving them comfort. Sometimes if I'm able to keep eye contact with a particular animal, I'm talking mainly of cows here at the slaughterhouse, they look back at me with a very steady gaze, and there is a connection that's made. And time and again, a number of times, I have seen that particular animal when they go to be unloaded from the truck, turn around and look at me, look back at me sometimes to where I'm standing, as if to say, can't you help me? So I do think that there can be a connection made, and maybe that I'm offering them some comfort. As far as distressing me, it certainly does. Yes, it does distress me.
I'm not being critical of what you're doing, but it must be cold comfort for the cow because you can't help her.
I know. And Kim, that's exactly it. That's the hardest thing. It's not that people abuse me, or, you know, we've had just a couple of weeks ago, I had some lovely young people in the Save Movement in Taranaki come down and stand with me at the slaughterhouse, as they often do, so that I'm not alone. Someone went by and threw a glass bottle that broke at the feet of one of the girls. And sometimes the slaughterhouse workers and the truckers can be threatening, can be intimidating, I should say. But that doesn't really worry me. What lays most on my heart is that I know that I can't help those individual animals. I can't do anything to save them. But what I can do is what I do. I come home after a vigil and I write it up. I add the photos that I've taken of them, a video if there's one, and I put it on social media, and that's helping to raise awareness. Yes, but when I'm lying in bed at night, it's the faces of the animals that I couldn't help that come back to me.
So how many hours a week would you devote to this?
Well, if you're talking about my animal rights work in general, and I work in quite a few areas, I probably do about 15 hours a week just on my Save Movement work. But I do some hours. I'm also a member of the Coalition for the Protection of Racehorses, spokesperson for Whanganui. So, and I do, you know, I'm kind of involved in many areas of animal rights and from different platforms. But if you take it all together, I think it would be close to 40 hours. And then I teach music on top of that. So even though I'm retired, I spend a lot of hours working.
Have you always been concerned about animal welfare? I mean, how did it start for you?
Well, I have always loved animals. I remember as a child, you know, there's a few photos I see of me sort of back then, and I've always sort of got a dog under my arm or cat, and I always loved the family pets, and I used to also rescue birds that flew into the window and fell down stunned, or if the cat got them. I used to try to set up a little surgery in the shed. And one of my happy places as a child was at, this is going back to the 50s, was a little still pond that was not far from where I grew up. And I just used to crouch on the side of the pond and watch the, you know, the water boatman insects skip across the water and see the dragonflies and watch the little tadpoles come in and suck in air bubbles and see the frogs plopping in. And that was always a happy place. And so I think I've always had a fascination for animals, and I have loved them. And even now when I'm out walking my dog, I always ooh and ah over other people's dogs. And I feel very connected to other animals. Yeah.
What do you feed your dogs, Sandra?
I thought you would ask me that. Well, about 3.5 years ago, I had 2 dogs then and 2 cats, and I tried to get them onto a vegan diet for various reasons, and one was financial. At that stage, I was living in the Waikato and I still had a mortgage, and on trying to live on the pension with just a little bit of extra money, I found it really hard. So I was getting into debt and so on, but also the animals didn't take to it too much. But so I now feed my dog roll and biscuits, and I feed my cat biscuits. But as a result of a recent conversation with a friend who was down for the Animal Rights March in Wellington recently, I have just this week decided I'm going to start again to try and transition my animals to a vegan diet. There's very good products now on the market. I think you can get even get some in supermarkets, but I know that you can get online. And there are a lot of dogs who are doing well now who have only ever eaten vegan food.
I mean, that might appease the conscience of their owners, but surely that's unnatural. Dogs are supposed to be carnivores, are they not?
Yeah, and they say that cats in particular, but I just know that friends that I know of, rather than know personally, recommend these diets and say that their animals absolutely thrive on them. So I would certainly like to give it another go.
You don't think that perhaps people just shouldn't have dogs and cats?
I know that there's some vegans that think that. I would be bereft if I didn't have my animals, but I'm not one who thinks that we should not have companion animals.
Mm. How hard is it for you to go about your business day to day in a country such as Aotearoa that is based on killing animals in large part?
Well, it is hard. I think every vegan finds it hard. A lot of us have families who are not vegan and friends, and it's definitely hard to sit down at a table where you know that, you know, everyone will be eating animals. I personally believe that animals, well, it's not just me who believes that science has established that animals feel emotions and think in complex ways. And our refusal to acknowledge this is really based on willful ignorance and a gastronomic preference. I think that we need to sort of be honest with ourselves and say, you know, do we really have to keep killing and eating animals and in the way that we do, causing them so much suffering in terms of factory farming, causing them egregious suffering for every moment of their lives before they're finally slaughtered? Do we have to be doing this in 2020?
I'm talking to Sandra Kyle about her efforts to halt the slaughter of animals. Is it factory farming or industrial farming that you want to end rather than killing animals then? I mean, if you have a free-range animal who has a happy life and a painless death, is that acceptable? I don't mean to split hairs for you. I'm just trying to drill down to the basis of your objection.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think most vegans would agree with me that we don't want any animal to be killed, and that's because no animal wants to die. And so I don't think we should, as a country, just be, you know, sort of downsize our farming, if you like, and, you know, produce high-end meat for export, that sort of thing. It's a little bit like saying to someone who beats their wife every day, well, if you just beat her once a week, that will be better. Most of us believe that we should just transition away entirely from animal agriculture.
Are you religious in any way?
I'm not religious. I was brought up Catholic, and I was taught by nuns in a convent. So I'm sure that formative education has informed, you know, the person I am now. But I think it's true to say that I am spiritual. I probably, going back to the early 80s, I have been a seeker after truth and spent some time in ashrams, firstly in Australia and then in India for short periods of time. I've been to India 6 times, actually.
A country not renowned for its tender treatment of animals.
Oh, I know, Kim. The last time I was there, I was actually there the last time as the recipient of an animal welfare award. And every single time, 6 times that I've been to India, one of the most painful things for me is to see the state of animals there. In fact, if coronavirus hadn't have happened this year, I would be in India now. The plan was to, and still is going forward, to go backwards and forwards to India, perhaps stay 4 or 5 months of the year in India, doing more hands-on work with animals. Last time I was there, I went to a cow sanctuary and saw the most extraordinary thing. There were some vets standing around a cow who had been sedated and restrained, and they had sliced open her abdomen, and they were bringing out plastic bags full of rotten food. And so that's the kind of thing that's happening. Cows are wandering around and picking over rubbish dumps for food and so on, taking plastic into themselves, and eventually it will kill them if something isn't done. And then you see so many skinny dogs and tonga horses and things, goats. It is heartbreaking. But on the positive side, awareness is growing, and there are more and more people who are working for animals, including Manika Gandhi, the daughter-in-law of Indira Gandhi, who actually presented me with my certificate. And she is a powerhouse for animals. She's a minister in the BJP government, but she also does a lot for animals, and she has an international reputation.
How did you get to win an animal welfare award in India?
Yes, it is a bit strange. And when I first got the email, I ignored it because I thought it was a joke. But how it worked is Philip Wallen, who is an Australian, but an Australian who spent the first 20 years of his life in India, and is a very well-known activist, an ex-merchant banker who's quite wealthy and does a lot for animal charities and so on. I had interviewed him on my radio show, Safe and Sound, that I did for 4.5 years, animal rights radio show. And because I interviewed him, he sort of remembered me, and he may have been following me on Facebook or something. And when his friends in India said they would like to give an award to someone outside of India and could he think of an individual, my name was one that he put forward, and I was the one that they chose, probably because of my solitary slaughterhouse vigils, actually.
So there you are, standing outside, did you say two Whanganui slaughterhouses?
Yes, yeah.
Holding a placard, what does the placard say?
Honk to show mercy for pigs going to slaughter. Love me, don't eat me. Stop killing animals, that kind of thing.
And as a general rule, do you feel supported by the passers-by or not?
Get quite a lot of expletives and thumbs down and sort of fingers.
Because they think you're a crazy person.
Like a crazy old bat. but I think it's more than that, Kim. I think that, you know, at some point my message is connecting as well and makes them feel uncomfortable. But I should also say that I have quite a few supportive toots as well. You know, maybe half and half, slightly more negative than positive.
Do you think that you can convert people by making them feel uncomfortable, or do they just turn away?
So it's interesting. In the animal rights vegan movement, we work in different ways from different platforms. A lot of people who know how delicious and healthy a vegan diet is will be concentrating on that, you know, sort of sharing vegan recipes and so on, and having an impact that way. For whatever reason, I work in that way too. I do opinion editorials and there's other actions that I do, but standing at the slaughterhouse is actually something as painful as it is quite dear to my heart, and I feel that I know that it can be confronting for people, make them feel uncomfortable, but it's what I want to do. And I also think that it is in its way quite effective.
In what way effective?
It's effective because it is making people think. I mean, I'm very consistent. I do a vigil every week, sometimes twice a week, and I always write it up. And even though I know that being on social media is a little bit of an echo chamber, you know, you have a lot of followers, but mainly they're, you know, vegans and other people who are interested in animals, but not entirely. A lot of people follow my pages who even slaughterhouse staff and truckers. I was quite surprised a few weeks ago that one of the truckers I was talking to said that he goes on my page and reads my posts. So, and, you know, we've all got family and friends who are not vegan. And so just being consistent with the same message, you know, that animals are a lot like us, that they have rights, that we shouldn't be hurting them, we shouldn't be killing them, that there are better ways, that it's healthier for us, better for the environment, that we could, you know, let's think about the alternatives and start transitioning to a better life, to create a kinder, gentler world.
I'm hazarding a guess that your ambition to close down all animal slaughterhouses by 2025 is a fruitless one. It's not going to happen, mm-hmm. and probably will never happen, because people like eating meat, and it may be hardwired into us that we like it because we need it. What do you think?
That you think that we need
nutritionally,
or we need protein, because there are emerging the protein industry, the plant-based proteins and the precision fermentation and so on that's going on, provides us with very nutritious protein that you can really hardly tell the difference.
But it seems such a palaver, right? When, you know, next door there's a leg of lamb. Do you know what I mean? You're not, people are hard pressed to imagine that it is not the natural order of things that we should eat at least a bit of meat from time to time.
Right. I don't know if you're aware about the Rethink XX, I think it means the Rethink 20 project in the US, which is an independent think tank. And what they do is they analyse and try to forecast the speed and scale of technological disruption and its implications for society. And they have predicted that in the US, dairy and cattle will collapse by 2030 because of the easily and cheaply produced alternatives, such as, you know, plant-based and lab meat and precision fermentation and so on. And I think people are realising it's better for the animals, better for health, better for the environment. That health and the environment, I think most people are aware how a vegan diet is going to be more healthy for us. Meat eating has been tied to colorectal cancer and other forms of cancers, heart disease, diabetes, other serious diseases, and also environmentally, that, you know, we've made the lungs of the earth, the Amazon, into getting towards a savanna because we have to clear forests to grow grain for livestock that we want to eat. So feeding grain to animals so we can eat the animals is not a efficient way of going about things. And of course, in New Zealand, our greenhouse gases, almost 50% are caused through animal agriculture. That's an enormous percentage.
No, indeed. You do have, on many levels, logic on your side. But how would you feel about indigenous people such as the nomads in Mongolia or the Maasai in Kenya, who are almost entirely reliant on meat for their diet?
Yes, I self-published a little book 2.5 years ago calling for the closure of all slaughterhouses by 2025 in New Zealand. And I've got a website that calls for the closure of all slaughterhouses in the Western world, simply because that I think it's possible in the Western world. It may take a whole lot longer in places like Africa for that to happen. But in terms of our Western world, it is certainly possible. We have the alternatives to do it. And if we can live healthier and improve the health of our planet and avoid terrible diseases like COVID-19 and stop killing animals, then why on earth wouldn't we?
You're known as the singing vegan. I don't know who gave you that title, but what do you sing?
Well, that kind of started when I, early on in my vigils, I was on the motorway and I saw a whole lot of sheep in a truck, and the front of the truck had gone off to collect more sheep, and they were just there by themselves, and it was a hot day and they were all crammed in together and they were looking miserable. So I went over and I was just patting them and talking to them, and I just suddenly had the idea of singing to them a little bit, I guess, like a lullaby a mother would sing to her child. So I started singing to them, and I sang a mantra, because I told you that I'd sort of lived in India and so on, and a mantra came to mind, and I started singing to them. And I felt that it calmed them down a little bit, and it seemed to help me also a little bit. So I've continued to do that. But I don't every time. Sometimes I'm too far away from the animals. But I still sometimes sing to them, and sometimes I play music for them as well.
You sound a very mild-mannered individual, and yet you are filled with this kind of determination. Do you never feel, ah, to hell with it, you know, you need to take more direct action?
What do you mean by direct action, Kim?
Well, a lot of animal liberationists are a great deal more militant than you are.
Right, I see what you're saying. Well, I don't want to make enemies. I think I am a compassionate person, but I've also got compassion for people. And I believe that we have to try and live the world that we want to see. So if we want a more enlightened, compassionate world, then we have to try and model that in our behaviour. But having said that, I have done supermarket disruptions and so on. That's when, you know, you go into a supermarket and stand in front of the meat aisle and signs and so on. I have done that because it's peaceful and it's an effective way of getting our point across as well. But no, I wouldn't do anything that's violent. I believe that the amount of violence that we show to other sentient beings on a daily basis to the tune of 70 billion land animals a year that we kill, and about 3 trillion sea animals. So every second of every day, millions of animals are being killed. I don't know how we will ever have peace within amongst ourselves while we continue that up. And it's like a huge negative cloud hanging over the earth, and we've just got to stop doing it. Once we stop killing animals, I think we really do have a chance to stop being violent within ourselves and stopping wars. But it begins with the stopping of killing animals.
So your vigils are keeping you sane, because otherwise you just go down into a very dark place, wouldn't you? I mean, how you feel about this must be overwhelming.
Yeah. I do have a heavy heart a lot of the time, and that's partly because, and I sometimes think I've got a bit of PTSD because I spend so much time at the computer, you know, writing and looking on sites, seeing things come up in my newsfeed and so on. And I will sometimes wail and put my head in my hands, and if I suddenly sort of see something and it will touch me or shock me and hurt me, that can happen several times a day. However, I do have a balance in my life. I have my own lovely, sweet animals, and I teach music to young children. So I teach in the Out of Schools music program here in Whanganui. So, you know, I have 40 or 50 students during the times that we're teaching during the terms. And I have some little darlings who come at home as well. And so they provide a lovely balance for me. So, and I can't, you know, I've got to be a good teacher for them. I can't be an old misery guts when I'm trying to relate to small children and teach them music. So it that helps keep me sane as well. But yes, I feel I have to do something. I can't turn away. There's too many of us who turn away.
That's Sandra Kyle.